Welcome to Cambridge, welcome to Peterhouse, welcome to the Intentionality New Directions workshop. This is, as I'm sure you all know, it's one of the activities organized by the Cambridge New Directions in Study of the Mind project, which is generously supported by the John Templeton Foundation. And I'd like to offer my thanks again to their generous and inspired support for our work. The Cambridge New Directions project is a two-year, or really strictly speaking, a two-and-a-half-year project coming to the end of this calendar year, funded by the Templeton Foundation, as I said. Now, of course, the important thing about these research grants and research projects is the work that's done. To give you an indication of the amount of work that's been being done under this this grant, I will tell you that the Templeton Foundation gave us 1.2 million. That's not just a boast about the amount of money that we've got, but it gives you some sense of how much activity they have been able to support with this grant. There are two sides to this project, or two large-scale components. One is support for smaller research projects across the world. We act as, so to speak, a conduit or a point of application for research grant applications, ranging from a few thousand pounds to for someone to run a workshop to large awards of over £100,000 for people to do empirical projects. The other side of the project, broadly conceived, is our activities in Cambridge, and I'll say a little bit about them in a second, and this is obviously one of those activities. The funded projects, I think we had two calls for proposals. We ended up funding 22 projects altogether across 2015, 2016, and 2017. The projects have been based in the UK, in continental Europe, in North America, and in Australia too. We have one project in Australia. The topics are very wide-ranging, and you can have a look on our website for the details if you haven't seen them. But from, for example, attention in Buddhist philosophy, a project by Janardhan Ganeri, to primitive colours and non-reductive minds. I'm not sure quite what I was going to contrast with Buddhist philosophy, but Derek Brown's work on that, for example. We had I've lost count now of how many applications we had in total. We had over 200 applications, I know that, for these projects. So, and I know that there may be people here who applied for funding from us and didn't get it, so you see that the competition was actually pretty tough. There was an excellent range of proposals we got. In our activities in Cambridge, on the other hand, we've been, it's a smaller scale venture, but we've had two workshops. This is the second. The first one was last year, which was non-physicalist approaches to consciousness, very successful workshop on May 2016. The material for that, including videos of the talks, is all online on our website. This workshop is called Intentionality New Directions. I'll say a little bit about what I had in mind in organizing this in a second. But I'd also like to point out we have what we call the Capstone Conference, which is happening in June 27 to 29 of this year. And that is a large conference in Churchill College. A three-day conference, or rather, actually, it's the same format as this one, which is two half-days and one whole day. But it runs from Tuesday to Thursday of that week, and it's called, rather grandly, the Human Mind Conference. And it will consist of four broadly themed sessions with a wide range of interdisciplinary speakers from philosophy, psychology, neuroscience and linguistics. This is a collaboration with the University of London's Human Mind Project, which is a relatively new initiative started by Sir Colin Blakemore, who is the Professor of Philosophy and Neuroscience at the Institute of Philosophy in the University of London. Colin Blakemore is running this very ambitious interdisciplinary project called the Human Mind Project. It has some seed funding from HEFCE, the Higher Education Funding Council for England, and it runs a series of events in London. But its first major conference will be this Human Mind Conference, which they are running in collaboration with us here in Cambridge. So that's a very exciting thing to look forward to. I'm afraid that unlike this workshop, you have to pay for it, and it's not cheap, I'm afraid. But there are some bursaries, and there are some opportunities to present posters. If you're a philosopher, which I assume most people in this room are philosophers, you may never have presented a poster before. But my view is that the whole poster phenomenon, where you present your whole idea on a piece of paper about that big, or maybe twice as big as that, it's a really good idea in philosophy. Just think how little you have to read, you know, if you just have to read the poster. And, you know, most papers only have a poster's worth of ideas in them anyway, and the rest is just all the padding. So I'd recommend trying a poster. That's for early career researchers only, I'm afraid. Guys, the older people among you will not be able to apply for that, Professor Meller. Among our other activities in Cambridge, we have a weekly seminar where I've been trying to develop some ideas of my own about intentionality and consciousness and the relationship between them. We're having a few public lectures. The next public lecture, I thought I would just advertise this, is on the 17th of May. I'm going to give a lecture. That's in Newnham College in Cambridge, and the details will be on our website. And it's called, Is the Mind a Physical Thing? I'll tell you the answer now. Actually, the answer is no. No. So if you wanted to know the answer, then you don't have to come. But if you want to know why the answer is no, then come along. And we also have weekly project meetings with the project team and invited speakers and people passing through. This is our project team. We started off, we had four postdoc positions. Three of the people who were appointed in the first year then got themselves other jobs. And we're very, very pleased to pass them on to other institutions. And we have seven people in the project team apart from me. So if there is anyone who hasn't seen our wonderful website, that's where it is. You can find more details about our our project there. So moving on then to the philosophy of the whole thing. This is a very broad remit we have, particularly for 2.5 years. But the theme of the project is non-physicalist and non-reductionist or non-reductive accounts to the mind or approaches to the study of the mind. And we include within that, we also include psychology and neuroscience, as well as philosophy of mind. These are two very broad headings, which I'm not going to say very much about in general, but except to say this, that there are two aspects to these two ideas of non-physicalist, non-reductive approaches to the mind. One is a sort of more positive doctrinal or thematic aspect, I suppose, which is thinking about accounts of the mind which are explicitly non-physicalist, and what that means and why I believe in them. but I also want to include a sort of more methodological approach, which is to start to think about these questions independently of these questions about the mind independently of questions of physicalism, or to think about questions about the nature of the mind, the philosophy of mind, without making physicalist assumptions and see how far you can go there, or without thinking that the question of physicalism is the main question, or that that's what's getting us all interested in the whole thing in the first place. So the two aspects of this theme really are the thematic or doctrinal or theoretical aspect, and the more methodological aspect, or try and think about things in a different way aspect. Or as we might put it, you know, there's more to all this than just qualia and zombies. You know, maybe qualia and zombies, maybe that's something, maybe that's a thing, but that's not all of the thing. In fact, it's a rather small part of the thing, as I see the philosophy of the mind. So people aren't excluded from the debates in the New Directions project if they happen to have this benighted attitude to the world that we call physicalism. They're not excluded. We'll let them in, so long as they don't keep on going on about, you know, what's this got to do with physicalism, or if you give a physicalist account of it. You can think about things in other ways, or you can keep it to yourself, which was another way to look at it. we talked about consciousness last year, and actually we had there quite a lot of wacky non-physicalist views of consciousness were discussed, as well as less wacky ones, too. This year's theme is intentionality. Which is a term which has a rich and complex meaning in history. I like the phrase the mind's direction on its objects. Other people talk about the self-transcendence. Intentionality is the transcendence of yourself, of the taking in of something other than you. Other people talk more prosaically about mental representation. And a common word in analytic philosophy is aboutness, which might raise the question of what is the correct definition of intentionality. My approach to this is my favorite philosophical quotation now, which is from Nietzsche, a famous remark of Nietzsche's, which is that only that which has no history can be defined. And intentionality, the concept of intentionality, is something which has a rich and complex philosophical history. You're unlikely to get very far in understanding what it is by trying to give a definition of intentionality by giving necessary and sufficient conditions for the application of the term. What we should do is think instead about what people are trying to get at when they're using what philosophers have been trying to get at when they use these, the words surrounding the notion of intentionality, what questions they were asking, what questions they're asking it now, why they're asking these questions, what's the relationship between all these questions, what presuppositions do you need in order to ask these questions, why should any of these questions matter to a philosopher, the questions that philosophers are asking about intentionality. That's the way we need to understand it. I mean, a better analogy than a definition, or a better thing, way to think about this and to think in terms of definition, would be something like that understanding a philosophical problem is more like understanding a city or a town or something. If you asked about, you know, the nature of Paris, you wouldn't get very far by being given the definition of Paris. You probably could be given a definition. It's probably what's in the dictionary under the word Paris. And it may say a large city in France with a population of such and such, the capital of France, and that would be it. Right? The definition of Paris isn't going to get you very far in understanding Paris. Part of what you have to do to understand Paris is to understand the history of Paris. What's Paris all about? Why Paris? What's it for? What does it do? Is it any good? What's it, you know, these sort of questions. And to answer those questions, you do need to understand why Paris came about. And why it's different from other places. And so this is an analogy I would prefer, that understanding a rich philosophical concept like intentionality is more like understanding a historical phenomenon like a town than it is giving a definition, as you may try and give a definition of of something which has no history. For example, a number. Giving a definition of a number is probably a very bad model for what it is to understand a philosophical phenomenon on the whole. And most of these phenomena are phenomena with with contested histories and trying to force them into some timeless definition is not the best way to go about it. That's my view. So applying this to some recent ideas, anyone who was philosophically active in the last few decades of the 20th century, which isn't many people here actually, because you're all so young, but if you were philosophically active, you would remember that there were some dominant ideas in discussing intentionality that you would always have to start with or address when talking about intentionality. And one of them was physicalism. So in the program in Philosophy of Mind that you find embodied in the work of Jerry Fodor, for example, physicalism was supposed to be the thing that got philosophers interested in the question of intentionality. The famous passage in his book, Psychosemantics, from 1987, I think, he said that when physicists have completed their catalogue of the ultimate and irreducible properties of things, he says, the concept of intentionality will not be in there. So then he says, if intentionality is real, it really must be something else. He said, so. And the project for philosophy then is to explain how intentionality can really be something else, right? In other words, that's a joke, really be something else. It's not, it isn't something else, because everything is what it is and not another thing. But how it can be understood in terms of other things which was thought to be more fundamental or basic from a physicalistic point of view. Now this is related to, but not essentially, connected to, but causally related to, the idea of reduction, of giving a reductive account of intentionality. So of course, one way to go, if you think that physicalism is your starting point, then there seem to be only three options when you're faced with an apparently non-physical thing. You either identify it with a physical thing, and you make the surprising identification of something with something already identified as physical, or you say it doesn't exist, or you give some reduction of it, which isn't an identity, but rather an explanation of it in physical terms. So the first and the third ideas, I think, are two of the ideas involved in the idea of reduction. I've called these things, although I probably picked this up from somewhere else, but I can't remember where I picked it up from, but I called the first one of these ontological reduction, obviously enough, when you identify something, you identify this thing with this thing. That's ontological reduction. You're just saying there's one thing rather than two. The second kind of form of reduction, that's the third option I mentioned, is what I call explanatory reduction. Explanatory reduction is when you explain why something is true by appealing to considerations from some other realm or other theory. So explanatory reduction is a relationship between theories, broadly speaking, and ontological reduction is identity, so it's a relationship between entities. And it's important to keep those two ideas apart because they are distinct ideas, and actually in the philosophy of mind we can find cases of people who have one but not the other on either side, and some people who have both, who adopt both views. But in the case of intentionality, the project of reduction is often expressed in terms of giving an account of intentionality, and the account is supposed to be non-circular in the sense that you give a definition of intentionality, of the intentional properties, what it is to have intentional content, and so on, in terms which don't mention other intentional notions. That's what used to be called giving an account of intentionality. So giving an account would be, or a theory of content, would be something where you didn't mention any intentional notions in what you came out with at the end. So when people used to give causal theories of intentionality, and they'd try and explain, like Fredretsky, for example, would try and explain intentional phenomena in terms of causal notions like information or indication, This was a paradigm of such an account, and probably the only one that's ever anyone's ever tried to work out in any detail, plus the biological or teleological accounts. another dominant idea, which went along with the views that I'm discussing, although it isn't necessarily entailed by them, is what I'm calling the semantic paradigm. And here I'm thinking that, to sum up what I mean by the semantic paradigm, it will be very familiar to you, which is that understanding intentionality has to go via understanding the semantics of propositional attitude attributions. So there are propositional attitudes, states with propositional content. We're going to hear a lot about that in the next few days. And there are attributions of propositional attitudes in natural language when you say that Sasha believes that Hesperus is phosphorus. That is the route to understanding intentionality and intentional content. That's a sort of a privileged route to understanding that. That's what we're trying to make sense of. And that's absolutely explicit in Fodor's work on this and many other philosophers' work. I call it the semantic paradigm because I'm here by semantic, I mean semantics in the narrow sense, where the word semantic does not mean the same as intentionality. Some people use these words to mean the same thing. I'm using the word semantic as it's used in formal semantics, that is to say, the attempt to give a systematic account of the truth conditions of sentences. That's what I mean by semantics. So when I say the semantic paradigm, that's what I'm talking about. So understanding intentionality by means of propositional attitude attributions. The fourth idea that goes along with these ideas is that intentionality is often conceived of on the model of singular reference. And I won't say very much about this, except to say that I think a lot of people think that that the real issue about intentionality is the issue about how what explains how you're able to think about this object rather than that one. Not how you're able to think by using properties or general facts or appealing to things like that, but rather singular reference somehow is the special case that's particularly difficult to understand. Now this, I think anyone who's familiar with analytic philosophy of the 20th century, you'll know why that's such an important thing, because there was this idea of reference versus quantification. Bertrand Russell's influence on this subject went stretched very far. And that idea that there is such a thing as, so to speak, just getting mentally in contact with some object in the way that you do when you name something has been a very dominant aspect of the standard paradigm. Now, there's something to be said for all these ideas, and I'm not going to say in the 5 minutes that I've got left, I'm not going to say what's to be said for them. All I want to say here is that these are not the only approaches. These are not the only approaches to the rich phenomenon of intentionality that we have, that the tradition has left us with. I want to approach the intentionality without considering the question of physicalism. I'm not a great fan of raising the question of physicalism anyway, and I don't think that any of the answers to the question of physicalism are particularly persuasive or appealing. So, but we can talk about intentionality without thinking about any of that, I want to say. The questions about intentionality arise for us regardless of whether we're physicalists or not. I also want to question this idea of giving an account of intentionality. What does it mean to give an account? What sort of account are we looking for? Why are we as philosophers giving accounts of intentionality? We don't have to give an account of everything. There's this wonderful scene in that movie, Shallow Grave. I don't know if anyone remembers this. It was a Danny Boyle movie, wasn't it? Shallow Grave, where the accountant he goes to his office, and there's this office just full of accountants, and there's the boss, and the boss is giving them the inspirational speech on day one, and he says, "You know why we're all here, don't you?" He says, "There's a whole world out there, and it all has to be accounted for." So in some ways, philosophy's not like that. We're not accounting for everything. We don't account for everything. We don't think we have to account for every single thing in philosophy, or give an account of every single thing. We think we have to give an account of certain things. Now, why do we think we have to give an account of these things rather than that? And what form should such an account take? I think it's really worth thinking about things like that. On the third dogma, as I'm calling it, the the semantics of propositional attitudes. I think there's a lot to be said for the semantic paradigm, but it fails to make sense of certain fundamental things. One of the things it fails to make sense of is consciousness. So when people want to explain intentionality in terms of consciousness, people will look at you and they'll say, how can consciousness be a relation to a proposition? And then those who think that they're saying that say, that's my theory. Consciousness just is a relation to a proposition. And then you have no idea which planet you're on. You know, the idea that consciousness might be a relation to a proposition. Something else needs to be said. A different approach is needed if we want to understand, say, the relationship between intentionality and consciousness. That's my view. By the way, these are all my views. I don't want to drag any of my colleagues in the project down with me on this. I think singular reference is a very refined philosophical construct that should not play such a central role in trying to understand intentionality in general. These are ways in which I want to depart from the somewhat mainstream assumptions I was identifying. So if we are going to have new directions in the study of intentionality, I think what we should do is try and scrutinize some of our assumptions, think about where we're coming from, why we're coming from there, why we're asking the questions we're asking. And I think for this we do need a historical approach, by which I don't mean a scholarly archival approach, but a vision of the subject as larger than just the discussions of the last 5 years. A sense of why, how the problems develop, where they come from, why we're addressing these ones rather than others. Why do we have these starting points? Why have these presuppositions and assumptions? And sometimes those questions are very hard to answer. Sometimes there's no general answer to them. But I think in this particular case, there's a lot that hasn't been done of this kind. There's a lot of people just starting with the idea intentionality is puzzling because of physicalism. And they don't know what physicalism is, they don't really know why they believe it, and they don't even know why that makes intentionality problematic. But that's just the starting point. So, to repeat myself again, I think how do the questions today and their presuppositions relate to the questions of the past? This is why I like the theme of new directions. We don't have one direction, we have many directions, we have lots of new directions we're trying to pursue. I haven't got much time left, so we better get on with it. When we interview here, we interview undergraduate philosophy applicants in Cambridge, and when they come, I always ask them why they want to do philosophy. And invariably, the first thing they say is, well, it's because I like challenging things and questioning things. So that is my approach to this. You've got to challenge things, challenge everything. So that's my homily. Welcome to you all. I'm really excited about the program we've got ahead. We've got a fantastic program.